rise.
The United States Court of International Trade is now in session. The Honorable Gary S. Katzmann presiding before court number 22-00351. Arely Demir versus the United States et al. Will the attorneys please state their names for the record, starting with the plaintiff?
David Simon of the Law Offices of David Simon, representing the plaintiff, Arely Demir. And if I may introduce who's with me today, Mr. Burhan Eldelekli is Chief Legal Officer of Arely Demir. Typhoon Hochman behind me here is Trade Remedies Officer of Arely Demir. And I think the court knows my wife and law partner, Isla Simon.
Absolutely.
Who is everything.
Yes. Thank you. Spencer Tubia, representing the defendant, the U.S. International Trade Commission.
Hi, Andrea Kasten, also representing the U.S. International Trade Commission.
Good morning, Your Honor. Jeff Garrison of Chagrin Associates, representing the defendant interveners.
Good morning, everyone. Please be seated. So I know that counsel has have received the and responded to the questions for oral argument. Those are the questions dated April 2nd, 2024, and the court has received the responses to those oral argument questions. And as counsel know, this is an opportunity really for you each to rebut, to respond to the answers that have been provided by opposing counsel. I understand that, as indicated in our letter, that the time allocations will be not to exceed 20 minutes for the plaintiff, for the defendant, and the defendant intervener. I will say in advance, as is my practice, I will give counsel an opportunity to file a post-oral argument submission, and that will be due on Monday, April 22nd. And that will be, you know, not to exceed 1,250 words. So without further ado, why don't we hear from Mr. Simon. And Mr. Simon, I should say that I've told my law clerks that if there were a school for broadcasting where the idea was what should a broadcaster and announcer sound like, you would be a model for that.
Good morning, Your Honor. Again, I'm David Simon, representing Arely Demir. Your letter also gave us an opportunity to have some brief comments as opening, and
yes,
I would like to do that. In 2016, the government conducted an investigation of hot-rolled steel dumping countervailing duties from a number of countries. In that investigation, the Commerce Department found that the Turkish respondent, Çolakoğlu, was not subsidized, did not receive any subsidies. And therefore, with respect to the CVD case, they were a fair trader. And when the ITC did its analysis of the final injury in the CVD case, the commission looked at the volume of imports from Turkey without the Çolakoğlu imports and found that the remaining volume was negligible and made a negative determination, 2016, in the CVD case. And part of that determination, by the way, the commission had to did decide that imports from Turkey were not likely to exceed the negligibility threshold in the imminent future. That's part of that negligibility finding in 2016. In the dumping case in 2016, Commerce found that both Erdemir and Çolakoğlu were dumping. Çolakoğlu successfully appealed that dumping determination, and after a number of remands and recalculations, Commerce found zero dumping. They corrected their methodology and excluded Çolakoğlu from the dumping order ab initio, retroactively. And they published a notice excluding them from the dumping order as of the date of the preliminary determination in the investigation, which means a period well before the ITC's original injury final determination. Okay. When that happened and when that decision became final, Erdemir pursued three approaches to having that retroactive determination become controlling in the dumping environment. First, Erdemir asked the commission to conduct a proceeding to reconsider its injury determination because Çolakoğlu was now with the exit of Çolakoğlu from the database, the remaining imports were negligible. And the commission ultimately declined to initiate that reconsideration proceeding on the ground that Erdemir had not alleged sufficient extraordinary circumstances. And the commission basically said, by extraordinary, we mean a fraud on the agency. A mere change, as occurred with the Çolakoğlu remand, does not constitute extraordinary. Okay, fine. That's not your judge's case, your honor's case, and we can set that aside for today. Then we asked for a changed circumstance review. All this is overlapping in time. We asked for a changed circumstances review. And ultimately, the commission declined to initiate that because they said it would be duplicative of the sunset review. And I cite that. It's in my response to your letter. And then in the sunset review, the commission declined to consider the entire issue on the ground that the sunset review is prospective only. You can't look back. So everybody here agrees that the dumped imports in the commission's original POI were in fact negligible. But various arguments as to why that fact of negligibility should not be taken into account by the law.
And what is our standard of review?
As with everything else, is there substantial evidence? But on this point, I think we are in the interpretation of the statutory language, otherwise unlawful, in other words. Why do I say that? And now I'm getting to the point where I address the responses of opposing counsel. Opposing counsel really doesn't come to grips at all with the entire issue of the negligibility of the imports. Their principal argument is finality. Once the agency has reached a final decision and in the absence of an appeal, it's final for everything for all intents and purposes and can never be changed. That's the government's position. That's the defendant intervener's position. I think it's a wrong position for a couple of reasons. First of all, I had no right. I mean, I had a right to appeal. We, Erdemir, had a right to appeal that 2016 decision. Okay, fine. But there was substantial evidence. We didn't deny. We didn't think. We didn't have something to present to court that said there was no substantial evidence on the record at the time that gave us a shot at an appeal. And we didn't perceive, we didn't believe there was any unlawfulness in the commission's decision. Okay, so what are we supposed to do? The government would have us appeal, and then what? We don't meet the statutory standard. We don't have, we don't allege unlawful. We don't allege lack of substantial evidence. Well, they move to dismiss and we're done. Okay. Or we move to appeal and they, and government will never agree that we, to stay our appeal pending some other case if we don't first file our complaint.
Now,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Can you help me with the chronology here?
Mm-hmm.
There was anti-dumping litigation underway before Judge Barnett.
Yeah, yes.
And that was already underway before the November 2016 deadline to challenge the original determination. Correct?
I honestly, I don't recall, and it doesn't affect my argument, I think, but go ahead. Let's see where you're going.
And again, I'm not suggesting any answers. I'm interested in your thoughts. Wasn't the ultimately realized possibility that you would succeed in that litigation, wasn't that more than just a speculative possibility that there might be some future change in the facts?
Well, I don't think it's more than speculative. One of the cases that that we're all citing, I can pull it up which one, says that it is at that point just a wish. That's all it would be. I could not, what would be in my complaint? No error of law, no error of fact.
Mm-hmm.
So where am I? I believe, I'll get to where I think I am,
mm-hmm.
All right? I believe that the legislative history, the SAA, that nobody's really talking about on the other side of the room, provides the answer to the entire issue of failure to exhaust judicial remedy, failure to appeal, because the SAA says, if the Commerce Department makes a change in the margin in an investigation, we're not talking about a review, but an investigation, if Commerce changes the margin in an investigation, the ITC can conduct a changed circumstance review if it is warranted. Now, let's talk about quickly, if it is warranted. Here, it's outcome determinative. How do we know that? Because if Cholakolu goes to zero, the CBD case tells us negligible. You can't have a different outcome on the same facts. So we know that getting the commission to pay attention to this would be outcome determinative. And the SAA is the answer to all these questions about finality. these guys that wrote the SAA and women that wrote the SAA, they were all adept. I mean, they knew the trade laws. They understood what was going on. Why did they put that sentence in there? Because of a case just like this. Or on the other side, it could happen to a petitioner, too. Look, a couple of weeks ago, there was a case on tinplate, okay? And we got a zero at the Commerce Department, and then ultimately the ITC went negative on all countries, even the ones that had margins. All right, at that point, the petitioners are in our place. They could appeal the negative at the Commerce Department and appeal the ITC and put the ITC on ice, on stay, until the Commerce Department appeal is finished. It didn't happen. But what I'm saying is that scenario, the SAA scenario of a change in a DOC final determination, applies equally on both sides of the room. It's not a nice thing for respondents. It's equally on both sides. And that's the answer to all of it. There's no finality because of that. That's the answer. I didn't have to go to court because the SAA says, if Commerce does this, you have a right to a CCR, a change circumstance review. Okay, so what happened here? I asked for a change circumstance review, and the commission said, no, it's duplicative of the sunset review. Duplicative. All right, let's take them at their word. Put into the sunset review, duplicate in the sunset review what you would have done in a CCR, which means consider the effect of the Cholokolu exclusion in the sunset review, because you just said it's duplicative. If they are coterminous, if they're duplicative, then put your money where your mouth is. Take all this into account in the sunset review. That's my argument. I don't have a finality problem because of the SAA, and the ITC, if they had initiated a CCR, a change circumstance review, okay, I'll deal with it there. But they said, we're not going to do it because it's double work. It's duplicative. What does that mean? It means you should have done it here in the sunset review. And I give you statute and authority that says the commission is supposed to establish the baseline, the true baseline against which subsequent events are analyzed. So that also fits into the sunset review concept. But the real concept, the core concept here, is what I have said, that the SAA entitled us, because it's warranted, because we knew it would had to go negative, it's warranted to conduct a CCR, and the only reason you didn't do it is because of this duplicative factor. Okay. I've exhausted my argument. That's what I have to say about what I believe is the core issue here. The answer to it all, the answer to the finality, the answer to the statutory scheme, and all of it is that provision of the SAA, which is authoritative. We know that from law, from statute. Finally, I know opposing counsel has spent most of their time, a lot of their time, a good bit of their time, talking about whether Erdemir exhausted its administrative remedies at the agency. I don't have a lot to say about that. The agency was certainly aware of our position, and we can argue it under different nomenclatures. Conditions precedent, we can make stuff up like that, but the core issue of it all is, you take away Cholokolu, we're out of here. The case goes away. The commission knew it. The commission said, we don't have the authority to think retroactively. They were wrong on the law, and they were blind to the facts. So I suggest that we do not have an exhaustion of administrative remedies, which in any event is discretionary with the court, but I think we're in a position where everybody understands, and the commission has as much as acknowledged that these are different formulations of the same concept.
Can I follow up on the question of negligibility and the Cola-Golu?
Cola-Golu.
Sorry?
Cholakolu. The Olu means summer. Okay. So it's like Jefferson.
Okay.
Right?
Right. Thank you. I'm going to write it out phonetically. Right. So, having found negligibility with the removal of the Cholakolu volume in the CBD case, this is what you state. This is in your letter response. It would be arbitrary and capricious for the commission not to find negligibility upon the removal of the Cholakolu volume in the dumping case. So, and you've spoken about this, but I just want you to have another opportunity to expand on the statement. Why must the commission establish, this is what you're saying, identical negligibility thresholds for both countervailing and anti-dumping duties? Can you identify a case where a failure to do so has prompted this court to set aside the commission's negligibility determination under the arbitrary and capricious standard?
I don't have a case at my fingertips, but I will say this. It's the same statute. There's not a separate statute for CBD injury and dumping injury. It's the same statute. You're talking about, and there's only one set of facts because the ITC has them all. So you take out 90% or whatever the percentage was, and you're left with 10%. And there's no difference in that as between dumping and CBD. And, I mean, if we get to that point and the commission says, well, it was negligible for dumping, but not for CBD, but not for dumping, okay, I'll take that on, but I cannot imagine that same facts and same law would have a different consequence.
Thank you.
I've said everything I have to say.
Any further responses to the answers provided by the government and the defendant intervener?
No, Your Honor. I've addressed the points that I think are critical to the analysis of this case. All of us agree that this case should not be stayed, and so I'm not disputing that proposition, and I'm comfortable that the court has before it what it needs to reach a decision here.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We'll hear next from the defendant, the United States International Trade Commission. And Mr. Tudia, I'm confident that you also have a voice that would be a model for broadcasting training school.
Why, thank you, Your Honor. Andrea, and Ms. Kasten just said the exact same thing before, after you made your comment.
I will say the same to Mr. Garish as well.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Morning.
May it please the court. Spencer Tuvia representing the defendant, the U.S. International Trade Commission in this case. Now, before I address plaintiff's responses to Your Honor's questions as requested by this court, I'd like to first emphasize that this case just involves a challenge to the Commission's five-year review determination. That five-year determination was supported by substantial evidence on the record. Despite what plaintiff may assert, for all purposes of its no likely, no discernible impact analysis, the Commission only relied on data from now non-subject producers in this five-year review determination. Now, moreover, the Commission collected data during the current five-year review exclusively from Turkish subject producers currently, not including Çanakkale. What did such data indicate? Well, such data indicated exports of subject merchandise, total exports, capacity and excess capacity, all of which led the Commission to conclude that Turkish subject producers, excluding Çanakkale, had the ability to export significant quantities of subject merchandise to the U.S. if the order were revoked. Furthermore, the Commission also considered pricing information, again, exclusive of Çanakkale, which indicated that prices were higher in the U.S. compared to third markets, thereby providing an incentive for subject producers to export to the United States. As required by the Commission statute, it took into account its original determination. However, the Commission specifically only compared, when it came to data during the original investigation, Erdemir and Erdemir alone export data compared to exports during the current POI, all of which indicates that the Commission's determination was supported by substantial evidence. Now, instead of addressing these findings, plaintiff premises his arguments on three incorrect assumptions. One, that an agency's final determination isn't final. Two, that it can use a sunset determination or a sunset review as a vehicle to reconsider the final original injury determination. And three, that the Commission relied on Çanakkale data and its no discernible impact finding. Now, I will address plaintiff's responses to Your Honor's question one, in which plaintiff states its condition precedent theory. But, Your Honor, to be clear, as a matter of law, there is no such thing as a condition precedent in five-year reviews. This argument was never made before the Commission during the five-year review.
Is there any case law that you can cite that says that there is no support in the case law for a condition precedent?
Yes, Your Honor. Absolutely. Your Honor, that plaintiff bases this condition precedent argument primarily on its analysis of Section 1675C1C and Section 1675A1A, right? When it provides a dictionary definition of continue or reoccur. However, what plaintiff explicitly omitted from its analysis were the words would be likely to lead to, which clearly contemplates a forward-looking analysis with no attaching conditions.
Well, now, what if the parallel litigation before Judge Reif results in the Commission's reconsideration of the original determination, which in turn results in a negative material injury finding?
Do you maintain
that reconsideration would have no effect on this case?
Your Honor, that goes to the core of our arguments here. That is a final determination made by the Commission during the five-year review. And this case is not about that reconsideration proceeding. That reconsideration proceeding is before Judge Rice in a separate proceeding. Now, according to plaintiff's condition precedent theory, it would be a free-for-all. Anytime there are intervening facts that occur after the commission's final determination, it would give a party the ability to relitigate those facts in a five-year review. And that is simply not allowed under the statute. Now, when plaintiff was pressed by Your Honor about the legal justification for this condition precedent in his questions, plaintiff's response was with the SAA, which mirrors language made in 1675A1A, which indicates that the commission must take into account or consider its final determination, injury determination of the original investigation, in a five-year review. However, reconsidering is certainly not the same as considering or taking into account. Considering does not mean reconsidering, Your Honor. This court has already spoken about what it means to take into account the commission's final five-year determination in both Nucor and Consolidated Fibers, both of which are cited on pages 19, 37, and 39 of our briefs. This court explicitly said the statute does not require a full-blown redetermination of the original injury determination. Instead, it simply requires the commission to take into account its findings for the original investigation. Furthermore, this condition precedent runs counter to the long-standing agency principle of finality, which was found by this court in Zongqing and indicated by this court. That principle of finality is codified in Section 1516A1A and Section 1671BB1 of the statute, which indicate final determinations are final but for a timely appeal.
And a timely appeal would, in this case, would have been...
Your Honor, that is a specific issue that's being addressed before the proceedings under Judge Rice, as it deals with the plaintiff's reconsideration request and exchange circumstance request. Now, plaintiff, though, and as Mr. Garish would point out, I'm sure, had its chance to join in the intervening case before the CIT, and it didn't. Other than saying consider means reconsider, plaintiff provides no other legal mechanism for redetermining a final determination during an original review. I mean, during a five-year review. Excuse me, Your Honor. And that goes to Your Honor's question, too. As a matter of law, a zero dumping margin does not mean that the commission automatically redetermines its negligibility determination. That's a final determination made by the commission. The commission has, as you know, has several commissioners that consider each fact, each fact on the record independently. There's new sets of commissioners. There could be new sets of commissioners since that original determination. We don't know what could have happened in that separate negligibility calculation. Your Honor, plaintiff is merely trying to use the back door when it should have used the front door. As indicated in question three, the commission's final negligibility determination was a final determination in the original investigation, and it hasn't been reconsidered. Finally, Your Honor, I note that negligibility is not a consideration taken into account in a five-year review, statutorily. That's a longstanding principle that was cited in Usinor. Indeed, all the statute requires is that the commission take into account its final injury determination of the original investigation. And that's exactly what it did here. And that leads to Your Honor's question four. That's exactly what the commission did here when it included data from the original investigation and it recited in its views. It included such data with a clear caveat on footnote 276 of its views, which indicated that data collected during the the original investigation may have included cholacolin. And Your Honor, to be clear, I repeat, for all purposes of the no likely, no discernible impact analysis in this five-year review, the commission only relied on cholacolin exclusive data. Now, even though the statute doesn't direct the commission to distinguish every factor of its original determinations from the final determination, that's a direct quote from Nucor, we did so here. Now, plaintiff, in its reply brief, on page 13, uses the word baseline. It also uses the word benchmark in its opening brief to infer that the commission improperly used that data from its original investigation to compare with data collected during the current five-year review. But in the commission's views for no likely, no discernible impact, the only time when the commission compared Turkish exports during the original investigation with data collected during the current period of view, which was on page 67 through 68 of its confidential views. In the final paragraph where the commission made its basis of no likely, no discernible impact, it only listed Erdemir and Erdemalone's only exports during the POI. Indeed, the commission not only cited to that specific data, it cited to data from the original investigation that included imports of subject merchandise from Turkey exclusive of cholacolin. That site is on tab 5 of the appendix, CR 19. That includes both tables H1 and HC of the original staff report. Now, the commission generally considers factors on a case-by-case basis, as outlined on page 15 through 16 of our brief, when it determines no likely, no discernible impact, none of which bind the commission to use only certain data points. In what is the commission's, as the court has said, relatively low threshold of no likely, no discernible impact. Indeed, no likely, no discernible impact can be discernible but not rise to a level sufficient to cause material injury. And what did that such data that we specifically included on page 67 and 68 of our views indicate? Again, Erdemir's own exports to the U.S. The commission, as I said, cited import data exclusive of cholacolin, only inclusive of Erdemir. Furthermore, data collected during the current review only included Erdemir when it came to no discernible impact, only included Erdemir, and a relatively new entrant to the market, Habas. We indicated that such data, including total exports, exports of subject merchandise, which subject producers could use to export significant quantities of subject merchandise if the order were revoked. Such data, as I indicated earlier, included prices, which showed that the subject industry in Turkey had an incentive to increase exports to the U.S. if the order were revoked. Again, the commission is required to analyze pre-order behavior, which is indicative of post-order behavior. And the commission clearly considered Erdemir and Erdemir alone's pre-order behavior. As such, this commission's finding was supported by substantial evidence. We used the same factors that the commission has used before this court in Kanye Asai. Now, Your Honor, before I conclude, I just want to note that plaintiff's response regarding question 5 was merely a repeat to its question 4. So for the purposes of expediency, I won't address. But for the reasons that I've stated above, we ask that you affirm the commission's final affirmative determination regarding Turkey. Thank you, Your Honor.
Before you sit down, I just want to engage you on the question of whether, as Mr. Simon indicated, that really this is a question of statutory interpretation. It's not substantial evidence. It's statutory interpretation.
Your Honor, the statute in case law is abundantly clear that the commission doesn't reconsider five-year review reconsider original determinations and five-year review determinations. This court has affirmed that very same principle in Consolidated Fibers, in Royal Business Machines, and Zongqing. That principle of finality, which is a longstanding agency principle. And as a matter of statutory interpretation, negligibility is a final determination under the statute.
Yeah.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'm sorry, you were about to say
something? No. That was my argument.
Assuming hypothetically that a party in Erdemir's shoes in November 2016 had no idea that Commerce would eventually issue an amended anti-dumping determination, what remedy would such a party have if an unforeseen amended anti-dumping determination undermined one of the bases for the unchallenged original determination? Would that party be limited to prospectively challenging the original determination and securing a stay of the court's consideration of that challenge in order to preserve any future challenge?
Thank you, Your Honor. That is an intervening fact that has occurred after the commission's final determination. And as such, it wasn't timely appealed. It, for all intents and purposes, became final. Now, the reconsideration of that proceeding is actually being litigated before this court under Judge Reif, which is the proper avenue in this case. I also note that Erdemir was involved in the litigation before Commerce regarding the CBD case and regarding the AD case. It well knew the effects of the court's determinations, what could have happened regarding the court's determinations in a five-year review in litigation. Notwithstanding that is a specific issue appropriate for this proceeding under Judge Reif and not before Your Honor today.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yeah.
So, you know, Reif in German means right.
Oh. I would have made a joke if had I known that.
Right.
I should have checked my German dictionary. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Garish, good morning.
Good morning again, Your Honor. May it please the court, again, for the record, I'm Jeff Garish of Chagrin Associates on behalf of the defendant interveners. And I may beg to differ with you, Your Honor, on whether my voice is appropriate for radio, and I certainly know my face is not appropriate for television. So I may disagree with you a little bit on that. Yeah, I'd like to start by taking a step back for a moment. And it seems like each time we receive a new submission from the plaintiff, from Erdemir, there's a new legal theory. There's a new argument here. In the original investigation, or I'm sorry, in the original Sunset Review, we heard nothing about any arguments on condition precedent. There was no mention of it whatsoever. On appeal, in the opening and reply briefs, that concept formed the focus and the basis for the argument being presented by Erdemir. It was strewn throughout both of those briefs. In the most recent responses to Your Honor's questions, Erdemir doesn't mention the concept or the term condition precedent once. The only time it shows up is in Your Honor's questions. Now, instead, we have a new theory of the case, which is that 19 U.S.C. section 1675A, A1A, required the commission to do a reconsideration of its original injury determination and retroactively declare that determination to be void. That's a new argument here, Your Honor. And, you know, it seems like we have a plaintiff that is in search of a legal theory and is not finding it because it simply does not exist. There is no basis to argue that the commission was required to do this retroactive reconsideration of its original injury determination and declare it to be void. And this court and the Federal Circuit have been very clear that when a party doesn't raise an arguments in its opening brief, certainly when it doesn't submit it in its reply brief, that argument is deemed waived. And even if it's just, you know, raised in a perfunctory way and not developed at all, it's also deemed waived. And the Federal Circuit case law on that, as I said, is very clear. In the Smith-Klein-Beacham case, which is 439 Fed 3rd 1312 at 1319 to 1320. There's also the Nova Steel case, which is 284 Fed 3rd 1261 at 1273 to 1274. And there's a series of cases before this court, Jiangsu Sengmao, 651 Fed Sub 3rd 1348, Arlencio, USA, which is 389 Fed Sub 3rd 1330 at 1339 footnote 1, and finally the Shell Oil case, 781 Fed Sub 2nd 1313 at 1337 to 1338. So we would submit that this new argument that they're raising should be deemed waived, shouldn't even be considered. But even if you do consider it on the merits, it doesn't provide them with any basis for their arguments. Regardless of what theory you consider this under, the commission was not required, and there is to go back and reconsider its original determination in the investigation, and there's no basis for arguing that they were required to do so. And there's that argument fails for two fundamental reasons. The first is that no one, neither Erdemir nor any of the Turkish companies, appealed the original final determination by the commission. And that commission determination, including the finding on negligibility, became final in November of 2016 when no one appealed it within 3 days of the order being issued.
So just to ask the same question that I asked the defendant, International Trade Commission, you know, assume hypothetically that a party in Erdemir's shoes in November 2016 had no idea that Commerce would eventually issue an amended anti-dumping determination. What remedy would such a party have if an unforeseen amended anti-dumping determination undermined one of the bases for the unchallenged original determination? Would that party be limited to prospectively challenging the original determination and securing a stay of that court's consideration of that challenge in order to preserve any future challenge?
I believe the answer is yes, Your Honor. First of all, I would say it was not unforeseen. Erdemir was a party to the original investigation, the original dumping investigation before Commerce. They were a party to the appeal of the Commerce Department's anti-dumping investigation and the appeal of the dumping margin calculation that ultimately led to Çolakoğlu getting a zero margin. So it was not unforeseen. They could have foreseen what the consequences were, and by their own admission, they knew that if Çolakoğlu was found to have a zero margin excluded from the order, they would argue that the same negligibility determination should have applied to the Turkish case. So it wasn't unforeseen for them. And the fact is they could have appealed. They had a right to appeal. Mr. Simon acknowledged they had a right to appeal. They could have argued in that appeal, in filing a complaint, that the commission's determination was not supported by substantial evidence and otherwise not in accordance with law because it was based on a flawed, faulty determination by the Department of Commerce. They could have appealed that and the Commerce determination, moved to stay the commission determination pending the Commerce case, and then they would have had a pending appeal of the commission determination. And Mr. Simon mentioned the Tin Mill case. He said that the Tin Mill petitioners could appeal both the commission determination and the Department of Commerce determination. Well, that's the same situation here, okay? They could have moved for a stay of the commission determination. Now, Mr. Sun says that the commission, the government, would never have agreed to a stay. Well, we've cited a number of cases, Your Honor, where the commission either agreed to a stay or at least didn't take any position. And we've cited the Oil Country Tubular Country cases, pages 23 to 24 of our response brief, where there was a finding of negligibility with respect to certain countries based on a negative commerce determination. The domestic industry appealed both cases. The commission agreed to a stay of the commission determination pending the commerce case, and the court granted that stay. The same was true in the ArcelorMittal appeals that were cited by the commission in their brief at pages 33 to 34 and footnote 20. So those are all situations where the commission agreed to stay the commission appeal pending the appeal of the Department of Commerce case, and the stay was granted, and the two appeals proceeded. There's also the case that we cited, DuPontasian, which is 2015 Westlaw 5024950, where there was a scope determination by Commerce, which found that certain imports were excluded from the scope. The commission relied on that scope determination in its sunset review, decided not to accumulate imports from Brazil, reached a negative determination on Brazil. Both determinations were appealed, and the appeal of the commission determination was stayed pending the resolution of the scope issue that was determined by Commerce, because the scope issue was at the heart of both cases. So we have a very similar, I would say, nearly identical set of circumstances here. They could have appealed. They had a right to appeal. They could have appealed. They simply failed to avail themselves of that opportunity. Erdemir cited to the LG Electronics case. That case was a situation where the appeal of the commerce determination was so speculative and so tenuous because it would have, they were saying that the margin calculation would have had some tenuous effect on the commission's full price, volume, and impact analysis. And the court said, well, we don't even know how the margin calculation fits into that analysis. So it's too tenuous, too speculative. So it didn't grant the stay there, but that was on a completely different basis. Here we have something that is not speculative and tenuous. They have argued that, you know, with the removal of Chalcova from the order, that should have resulted in a negligibility determination. That's not speculative. That's not tenuous. So that LG Electronics case does not apply here, Your Honor. This court has recognized the importance of finality in agency determinations. It has said in the Zhao King TIFO New Fiber case that final agency determinations are immune from attack if they are not appealed. And that applies to all aspects of the final determination. This interest in finality is made even more pronounced here, given the language of the SAA. And I would agree with Mr. Simon that the SAA language is the key here. But what the language there says is the statutory requirement in 19 U.S.C. section 1677-35C that says that the commission is to use the most recently published dumping margin at the time that it closes its record. That language precludes, and I'm quoting from the SAA, precludes challenges to a commission determination on the basis that Commerce later modifies the original dumping margin. And they specifically mention it in this context that we're dealing with here, where there's a judicial remand of a Commerce
calculation of a dumping margin. Now, the language that Mr. Simon cites relates to the ability to get a changed circumstances review. We're not dealing with a changed circumstances review here, Your Honor. They're saying that in the sunset review, the commission had the ability to retroactively reconsider its original injury determination. The interests of finality bar that, as clearly laid out in the SAA. The commission's affirmative injury determination, including its non-negligibility finding, was never appealed. It therefore became final in binding agency action. It was not voided by anything that happened in the Commerce appeal, and it remains valid, binding, and in force as a matter of law. Mr. Simon's responses to his question say you can't have a finding of recurrence or continuation of something that never happened. Well, the final injury determination, it did happen. It's final, binding, and remains in force as a matter of law, and it provided a valid basis for the commission's sunset review determination here that there would likely be a recurrence or continuation of material entry. Their argument also fails on another fundamental basis, and that's because it runs afoul of the clear framework of analysis in a sunset review. As the statute, the SAA, and this court has made clear, in a sunset review, the commission is required to do a prospective forward-looking analysis. It simply cannot do a retroactive reconsideration of its original injury determination. And 19 U.S.C. section 1675A, A1A, does not require the commission to reconsider its original injury determination, as Ernemir has argued in its responses to Your Honor's questions. In fact, to the contrary, this court stated in Consolidated Fibers, which is at 571 F sup 1355 at 1360, that section 1675A, A1A does not require a full-blown reconsideration of the original injury determination underlying the anti-dumping order that is the subject of the sunset review. All that provision requires is for the commission to take into account its original findings on volume, price, and impact. And that is exactly what the commission did here. It took into account its findings on volume, price, and impact in the original investigation as those related to what would be likely to happen, what the likely behavior would be of Turkish imports in the future. And as Mr. Tubi indicated, they did that by focusing on Erdemir's imports. They excluded Çolakoğlu's imports from the quantity, from the volume analysis that they did, and they found that Erdemir's imports during the original investigation were probative of what it would be likely to do in the future if the order were to be revoked. So the bottom line here is that under the statute and under the case law and the SAA, the commission was unable, let alone required, to do a retroactive reconsideration of its original injury determination in a sunset review. I want to say a few brief things about the Borland case, which Erdemir has cited in his responses to questions. That case does not in any way require a different result. In fact, just the opposite. It does not have any application here. It doesn't have any relevance here. It was a case that was decided before the Uruguay Round Agreements Act, before the provision in the statute that says the commission is to only consider the most recent margin calculated by Commerce at the time that it closes its administrative record. It was decided before the SAA, which and the language there regarding the need for finality of commission injury determinations. So before all that, it also was in the context of a pending appeal. So there was no final injury determination there. So it has no application here whatsoever. Erdemir has also cited it for the importance of accuracy in determinations, but as this court found in Jiaoqing Tifo, finality trumps accuracy. So that just tells you just how important finality is and the need for recognizing that, which that bars Erdemir's challenge here. moving on to other parts of the responses, I think all parties agree that this case should not be stayed pending the parallel actions that are pending before Judge Reif. The claims here relate to the commission's powers in a sunset review, which, of course, don't require any particular resolution or outcome in those other appeals. They also relate to whether the commission's determination was supported by substantial evidence, the determination that there was no likelihood that Turkish imports would not have a discernible adverse impact. That's an issue that's unique to the sunset review. Those other cases don't relate to the facts that the commission was looking at.
Mr. Garish, in your responses, at pages 2 to 3, you state that it is therefore not necessary to wait for a resolution of the parallel actions to reach the issue of whether the original injury determination was void. If the court enters, this is a hypothetical, judgment in your favor in this case, and then the outcome of the parallel action turns out to be that the original determination is void, then what? What's the result?
Well, the result would be that would be a separate proceeding that the commission, if the court decides in Erdemir's favor in the case that involves the request for reconsideration, the commission would presumably conduct a reconsideration proceeding. And if they did and found against us, what would happen is the order against Turkey would be revoked in that proceeding. It would be a separate proceeding. It would not impact this case at all. So that would be a separate remedy and a separate proceeding. On the issue of whether the commission committed legal error by failing to exclude Çolakoğlu's imports for all purposes, I think Mr. Tugin has addressed that issue extremely well. The commission was required under Section 1675A1A to take into account the volume and price effects of the subject imports during the POI. They did that. That's exactly what they did here. And they took extra steps to exclude Çolakoğlu's imports from that analysis. They only focused for the volume. They could exclude Çolakoğlu's imports. They focused on Erdemir's imports and what that showed for what they would likely do going forward if the order was to be revoked by citing the table H1 of the confidential staff report. On the pricing data was done on an aggregated countrywide basis. They couldn't exclude Çolakoğlu's imports, but they acknowledged, they fully disclosed that it included Çolakoğlu's imports. And so that it wouldn't be inadvertently considered or relied upon. And what they did in their determination here was they relied on evidence that had nothing at all to do with Çolakoğlu. They relied on Erdemir's experience during the investigation. They looked at the excess capacity and the additions of capacity that didn't involve Çolakoğlu. The ability to shift production from other products that didn't involve Çolakoğlu, the attractiveness of the U.S. market, and the restraints on exports to the European Union by virtue of the anti-dumping order there. So their decision was based purely on evidence not involving Çolakoğlu. One final point, Your Honor, which is there are different frameworks for analysis for discernible adverse impact and for conditions of competition. To see that, all you have to do is look at what they did on Brazil. They looked at the very same evidence there, the quota, and they reached different determinations. They found that it allowed them to ship a discernible amount of products, and they found no likelihood of no discernible adverse impact on Brazil, but they found that changed the conditions of competition. So they found different conditions of competition, relied on the same evidence, looked at it differently, reached different results. Your Honor, the Commission's determination is supported by substantial evidence, fully in accordance with law, and we would ask you to affirm that determination.
Thank you, Counsel. Thank you. So since we're all assembled here in the courthouse in New York, and that this is great, I will give each side the opportunity, not more than 2 minutes. Don't feel compelled. But if you'd like to respond further, please do. And know that, again, the council will have the opportunity to file a post-argument submission that will be due on April 22nd of not more than 1,250 words. Also, to the extent that any cases have been cited during the argument which have not been previously presented to the court, please present those cases in a letter without argument, just a citation and perhaps just a parenthetical. Thank you. Mr. Simon.
Yes, David Simon again for Erdemir. Again, I want to focus on the issue of finality. Note that counsel for the commission and for the domestic producers has really not addressed the impact of the SAA statement that the commission may conduct a changed circumstance review on the basis of recalculations by Commerce of the dumping margin in an original investigation. I'm not talking about changes in reviews. I understand that's always changing, but in an original investigation. And that is independent of whether we filed an appeal of the original ITC action. Your Honor, if we were supposed to have filed an appeal of a case because there might be some subsequent change in another case that would affect the original case, your docket is going to be a very heavy one because every investigation is going to protect their party, their client's interests. Every party is going to have to file appeals on both sides. And just because we have this bifurcated process with Commerce and the ITC does not mean that Article 3 of the Constitution doesn't apply. What's our case or controversy? What's our imminent injury? Imminent injury. And finally, both opposing counsel say, in a Cholakolu situation, we have no remedy. We're out of luck. That can't be the case. And the SAA tells us that's not the case. It shouldn't be the case. We shouldn't have to file a fake appeal in order to avail ourselves of to get justice, to get the result that we are looking for. The SAA knew that. The guys that wrote the SAA knew that.
So that even assuming that Article 3 would have precluded a challenge, that, in your view, would not excuse a failure to challenge the original determination for the purpose of why wouldn't that? Let's assume that Article 3 precluded such a challenge. Okay, would that constitutional barrier excuse a failure to challenge the original determination for the purpose of reopening the material injury finding here?
I'm not sure I'm catching what you're saying. Are you asking me whether, aside from the Article 3 issue?
Yes, right, yes.
Whether aside from the Article 3, but I still don't have substantial evidence or otherwise unlawful. I can't meet the statutory requirement for an appeal. Mm-hmm. My only lack of substantial evidence is some concept that maybe someday, 5 years later, the CIT is going to remand another client's decision that will, I mean, be this case. I think that's not a wise proposition in jurisprudentially. Everybody's going to be flooding the courthouse then. You got to appeal every decision because somebody else might make a change. Shouldn't work that way. And we've got the SAA. And finally, I just want to come back to the language. the commission says, we didn't initiate the change circumstance review because it's duplicative. Okay, duplicate what you should have done and take it into account. That's what they should do here in the sunset review. You say it's duplicative, please duplicate it. Do what you should have done. Do the analysis that should flow in a CCR.
Thank you, counsel.
Thanks.
Thank you, Your Honor. Spencer Kubia, representing the USITC. Regarding Your Honor's question about hypothetically whether Aramir would have known what would have happened in the further litigation before Commerce, I note that an intervening fact is an intervening fact. In all of the cases that I've listed before this court, Consolidated Fibers, Zhao Qing, and World Business Machine, they were involved intervening facts that occurred subsequently after the Commission's final determination or Commerce's final determination that no one could have predicted. In Consolidated Fibers, someone predicted that the domestic producer had an antitrust scheme that would have changed the outcome of the original determination? No. Right? In Zhao Qing, could someone have determined that Commerce used the wrong dumping calculation in its calculation subsequently in its five-year review, in its administrative review? No. The fact of the matter is, however, that Aramir knew about the outcome of litigation. Aramir and Cholukolu both appealed Commerce's determination and both argued for reduced rates. They would have very well known the result of their arguments before Commerce and how it would be represented at the Commission. I reiterate Your Honor's questions about according to law, would be likely to lead to or is clearly forward-looking. And when the Commission and the SAA and the statute indicates that the Commission must take into account or consider a final determination, it certainly doesn't mean reconsider. Your Honor, for the above-mentioned reasons, we ask that this Court affirm the Commission's affirmative final determination regarding Turkey. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Ms. Garish?
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, Jeff Garish on behalf of the defendant interveners. Mr. Simon indicated just now that we never addressed the SA language on changed circumstances reviews. But I think I did address that. And the point is a very simple one. That language relates to changed circumstances reviews and the ability to have a changed circumstances review. It does not relate to the ability to challenge the Commission's original injury determination through a sunset review and do a retroactive reconsideration of the original injury determination in a sunset review. And the language in the SAA that precedes that language that Mr. Simon has cited to on page 851 precludes such a challenge here. And Mr. Simon said, you know, okay, if it's duplicative, you should do what you would have done in a changed circumstances review. Well, that's exactly what the Commission did here. The changed circumstances review is also a forward-looking analysis like you do in a sunset review. It is not the ability to look backward. So that is exactly what the Commission did here. It looked to see what would happen in the future if the order were to be revoked. Mr. Simon also indicated that they shouldn't have had to have filed a fake appeal, and that Article 3 and maybe, you know, the inability, as he would describe it, to raise substantial evidence claims would preclude such an appeal. Well, first of all, we will never know because they never did even try to file an appeal here. They could have, and other parties had followed that path, as I mentioned, We cited, you know, a number of cases here on oil country tubular goods, the ArcelorMittal cases, which were cited in the ITC's brief, and in the DuPont-Tianjin case. Those are all very similar situations here. They could have filed an appeal. They could have moved for a stay, and they could have preserved their rights here. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes our arguments today. And again, the counsel will have the opportunity to file a post-argument submission April 22nd, not more than 1,250 words. And please also include a letter listing any cases that you've cited that have not been presented before. It'd be helpful to have a parenthetical, not argument, but a parenthetical as to the relevance of the case.
Can I ask a question on that?
Sure.
Will that listing of cases be counted against the club?
No.
Okay.
No. Not for any party. Yeah. So wish you safe travels, and hopefully no earthquakes, and be well, and until next time. Thank you very much. Excellent argument.
All right. Court stands adjourned.